Radio Newark, the home of Radio Newark Sport. Weeknights from 7. Radio Newark Sport. Brought to you with Smith's Timber Merchants. For all your fencing, decking and DIY needs on Appleton Gate, Newark. Visit smithstimber.co.uk.
The USA have become the latest big name side not to qualify for the World Cup after being beaten by Trinidad and Tobago. Apparently, had they won that match, they'd all got an invite to the White House to meet the president. They lost to an 88th minute goal. Draw your own conclusions. And I've got another USA football story in a minute. But first, tonight, one of the greats of Newark Sport is with us. Oh, yes. Julie Gray has spent a lifetime giving the less fortunate among us the chance to be involved in sport. In fact, she's made that good a job of it. She's now the globe-trotting Julie Gray. So it's to Radio Newark via Toronto and Lincoln, and that's just this month. A new sport and a new name to Sport Towers. Newark Golf Club captain Dave Yarnell talks about his club and the big fundraising day they had on Sunday. And with a little bit of luck, we catch up with Rob Orgill and find out how the Dave Lewis Challenge went. That's all about orienteering. I couldn't even find his checkpoint in the car. Oh, yes. I'm Mick Bradley. He's now decided he's English. And this is Radio Newark Sport. Every Wednesday we choose one headline story and ask Mr. Smith and our guest for their opinions. The only problem is they don't know what the story is. Well, it's a little different tonight because I've got a story for each of them. Julie's is a bit too serious for our Tony. But first, that other American football story. Aaron Johansson was born in the USA, Tony. As a youngster, his family moved with him to Iceland. He played for Iceland in the junior form of football. Played for his country. But he wanted to play in World Cups. So he switched his allegiance from Iceland to the United States of America. And anybody who knows anything about football knows who is and who isn't going to the World Cup. Bad move, sunshine. Bad move. Shame, isn't it, really?
God bless him.
Bless him, yes. I bet that's what he's saying as well. Right, before my two super-duper questions, let's find out what's happening in the world of local sport. And a good day for the 4A's at the Lincoln Marathon at the weekend with Jacob Hayes, first junior in Division 5, Jacob Mansfield, winner in Division 9 and promoted straight to Division 7, and the lady herself, second in Division 8 and also promoted. She's going to explain how she let that one happen in a few minutes. Our cyclist Flo Lishman took part in the first round of the National Cyclocross Trophy at Derby on Sunday. She was the only 11-year-old girl in the under-14 sections and managed to finish overall a great 7th. A really hard race, run over the same course as the senior men. And little sister Lotte, not to be outdone, had a week off from cycling, but did the Rutland Schools Cross Country Championships for year 4. And of course, being Lotte, she won it.
This is Radio Newark Sport.
And one quick football story for you, Tony. The three Newark lads played for Grantham Town last night and they won 3-1 at Colville and Danny Meadows even chipped in with a goal. Your question first.
Okay.
Or your comments first, I should say. The Premier League is backing away from its latest wonderful idea, which is to have live games at prime time on a Saturday evening. they've decided they cannot compete with Strictly Come Dancing and X Factor. This is genuine.
Yeah, okay.
They're also, with the TV companies, backing away from the idea of a 4 o'clock kickoff on Christmas Eve. The match that's likely to be in that slot is Arsenal against Liverpool. And Liverpool fans cannot get back to Scarsland on the train after that match if it does kick off at 4 o'clock. I'm getting sick to death of TV ruling kickoff times. I don't want football starting at 7 o'clock on a Saturday night. I don't want football starting at 4 o'clock on a Christmas Eve afternoon when you should be doing everything else apart from watching football.
I agree with you completely. You never football is dominated by television these days, and the reason for that is television pays such big money for it. You know, the fact that they're sort of chucking money at it like crazy, which is good for football because it means that the likes of Stoke City can say no to the likes of Chelsea when they come for some of their players. So that's great, and it makes the Premier League stronger, it makes the football more entertaining and less predictable. And I just think football on a Christmas Eve is crackers as an idea, because it's going to cause so many rows. Christmas is such a tense time for everybody anyway, amongst family members. You know, you don't want to start off with a row, do you, on Christmas Eve? So I think you should steer well away.
And Saturday night, football's on telly tonight. You didn't want to watch Strictly, do you? Yeah, righto. Missing Strictly and Casualty to watch football. I'm sure that's going to happen in our household. Here indoors would not be happy.
No, same here.
Just leave it. 3 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon. Leave it. Right, this is the serious one. Good evening, Julie Gray.
Good evening.
How are you?
I'm fine, thank you very much.
We should have a multicoloured webcam in here because the hair is just... It wins the award for the year by a long, long way.
She looks like Aqua Woman.
She looks like Aqua Woman, wouldn't she?
Some of the kids think he looks like a bit like My Little Pony.
Oh, we used to have hundreds of them. Hundreds of them. The house was full of My Little Ponies. I was fascinated, Julie, to read... an article by hockey player Helen Richardson Walsh, and apparently, and this is where I'm relying on you here, because I'm well out of my depth. There are five widely accepted stages of grief: denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. In 2014, Helen was, in her own words, fluxing between anger, bargaining, and depression stages. She had back surgery on a chronic injury and was giving up any hope of playing in the World Cup. 2 years later, as we all know, she took the decisive penalty and won an Olympic gold medal for Great Britain. As part of World Mental Health Day, which it was yesterday, this year focused on mental health in the workplace, well, we do that in, we're saying this in sports, a 36-year-old experience with depression, the help she received, and now she is learning to be comfortable with feeling uncomfortable. I'm putting the pressure on you straight away here.
Yeah, thanks.
What is comfortable with feeling uncomfortable?
I think a lot of people are never quite comfortable in their own skin, and they're always, you know, they're always going to experience some mental health issues, but they can learn how to cope with it, and that's being comfortable with that uncomfortableness, if you like.
So learning to cope with what life has given you.
Yeah. Okay. I think so.
And the reason I asked Julie that question is because she spent a lifetime encouraging people to cope with what life has given them, and if somebody's just sort of flown in from planet Zog and doesn't know who Julie Gray is, Julie, tell us a bit about yourself and a bit about what's got to be one of the premier clubs anywhere, the 4A's.
I started 4A's a very, very long time ago, basically because there was very little out there for youngsters with special needs, additional needs, to get into sport. Obviously that's changed tremendously now. There's lots of different clubs out there for youngsters with special needs, but there's also a lot more integration into mainstream sport. But there's still a niche for those kids who might not just feel that they fit in any other place. So that's where my club comes in, really, and we specialise in doing canoeing. We do the odd things like, you know, camping and a few social events as well and things like that, but it's mostly canoeing, and it's marathon and sprint.
We spoke last night to Rachel and Richard Sheldrake, who was our guest, and I picked up on this five-year-old lad crying his eyes out at when Wales got beaten and not going to go to the World Cup. Probably didn't know why he was crying, but he was crying. And I just said, should sport make you cry? And I remember a few years ago, we did a bit of a Christmas special with you, and I went round to some of the parents of the children that Julie was taking canoeing at the time, and heard some of these stories that she's too modest to actually say about children that wouldn't leave the house, children that couldn't walk, and they found one way or another the four A's, and all of a sudden they've got a goal. And she's too modest to, you know, take all the praise on this, even though she should. But that is what I'm saying about this is the uncomfortable thing. You have took children who didn't see what was in front of them, and they live from one week to, I was talking to Flow Save Diamond lads, there's two of them in here the other week.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And you know, it doesn't matter who scores the goal, they all go and celebrate. Because they live from one football match to the next football match, because they can do what they do playing for Man United and Chelsea. They can do the same. This is sport at its best, Julie.
It is grassroots sport, and that's where my passion lies, really, is getting people into sport. It doesn't matter if they're not the fastest, the strongest, you know, the most technically excellent, but just having a go is what I really, really enjoy doing, getting kids to have a go.
The youngsters of that group, which was what now sort of 5 years ago when we did that programme, five, 6 years ago we'd have done that, do they keep in touch with them? I mean, do they remember Julie and what Julie did for them as they move on through life?
Well, definitely. I mean, I keep in touch with most of the youngsters. I mean, some of them obviously are, you know, have gone off to do other things, and they don't do any canoeing anymore. But yeah, I still keep in touch. We're all still mates on Facebook and all that kind of stuff, you know.
Because you've had British champions and people at world championships, and this is little old, you know, don't let's mock this. This is little old 4A's in Newark. But in your sphere of what you do, you've had kids right at the top of that, haven't you?
Yeah, in the past, obviously. I think that was particularly when it first started. It's grown now so that it's a really professional, you know, sport, para canoeing, and there's absolutely no way that any of my youngsters would get into there. I haven't got the time to do, you know, training twice a day and all that kind of stuff. But it was great to have those youngsters that showed people the way to start off with, and encouraged people to come in and have a go themselves. And you know, if we find anybody with talent, we always try and encourage it. And it might not actually be for canoeing in the end. They might decide that they want to go and play a different sport. But it gives the having been at the 4A's gives them that confidence to say, well, actually, I want to have a go at something else as well.
I think in Newark, it's probably wrong to say lucky, isn't it? But we're blessed with the 4A's, the Jaguars, and the Diamonds that we do bring, and we bang on about this
and
on
the regular. Well,
and yes, mustn't forget Helen Swimming Club, or she will tell me off.
Yeah.
And we bang on about this on a regular basis, and quite rightly. So we're so lucky in Newark, really, in that respect.
Yeah, very lucky. We've got lots of different clubs for that cater for different abilities, and you know, different kids want to do different sport. They don't all want to play one thing. Oh, there's the bocce club as well. I forgot that. Yeah, so they don't all want to do the same thing. But, you know, we've got such a wide variety of stuff in Newark that kids can do. I think it's great.
Tell me about the Lincoln Marathon then, because it's not running 26.2 miles. You're on the water.
No. For those in divisions 9 to 7, because it goes up to 1, you do 4 miles. And for those in 6, 5 and 4, that's 8 miles. And, you know, we haven't got anybody higher than that yet.
Well, we both met Jacob Hay last year.
Yeah, Jacob Hay,
and that's something else we're talking about, because it's sports awards time.
It is, yes,
and,
it's sports awards time,
so
yeah.
Don't forget those forms.
Yes, I know, I haven't done it yet.
Right.
Yes, Jacob will be getting put up, and I talked to him about it yesterday, particularly because of what he's been doing in marathon, to tell you the truth.
I mean, Jacob was part of one of the most memorable nights of sport in Tony's Little Black Book, wasn't he? The one at Newark Rugby Club.
Yeah.
he was part of, as again we're going back to when sport made you cry, well I don't think there was a dry eye in the eye that night.
I mean
the rugby club that night, the time we'd finished.
Certainly really wasn't. Good grief.
But anyway, Lincoln Marathon, tell us.
Okay, so obviously Jacob is now in Division 5, which means he does 8 miles. I think last year, the photograph that we showed was one of him just beating his dad by a couple of seconds in one of the 4 mile marathons.
He enjoyed that, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh,
didn't mention
now,
it.
Now he might have just.
Yes,
once.
Just once.
Yeah. Now he's in Division 5. His dad is in Division 6, which is the lower division, and he's regularly beating him by over a minute. So so he's really, really improved. His long distance is incredible. I can't keep up with him, not a chance. He's really done very, very well with that this year.
And yourself, come on.
I thought, well, because I didn't have any little ones to have to kind of go round with an escort, I thought, oh, why not? I'll have a go. Years and years ago, I was in Division 8, so I put myself in Division 8. I thought, well, I'll have a go. The one young man who's a rival of our lot at Home Pierpont shot off at mega light speed. No chance of me catching him up. And I thought, you know, can I have a go? That competitive spirit sort of kicked in, and I tried my best, and obviously I came second. But then, just as I was about to finish, I was thinking, you silly fool, Julie, you're going to get promoted now, aren't you? Yeah, and unfortunately, yeah, but, you know, it might be 3 years until I do the next marathon, by which point everybody will have forgotten them.
Make a note of that, Tony. So in a few minutes' time, I want to talk about you tonight, because the way that your sport took off from the forays and a few others pushing and championing it, we've now got a world sport on our hands that need organisers and people that know what they're doing, which means you're globetrotting. So we need to talk about that, and that took you indirectly to the Invictus Games, of which not showing off the t-shirt, but she's got one. But
I am showing off the t-shirt.
You are showing off the t-shirt.
Not much.
Quite right too. But coming up next, let's turn attention to golf and David Yarnell. Okay, it was a big day at the golf club, at Newark Golf Club, on Sunday, and joining us now is the club captain, David Yarnell, to tell us all about it and a bit about his club. David, welcome to Radio Newark Sport.
Thank you.
And a big day on Sunday, a bit of a fundraising day as well for a cause that on Radio Newark Sport that we are very close to. So tell us a bit about it, if you would.
Well, join your captaincy here. Every captain has a captain's charity day, and mine was last Sunday, the 8th of October, where people, all the members and things, they participate in a round of golf, but all funds raised are basically go to my charity, which this year I chose Guide Dogs for the Blind. We had 110 people play on the day. My wife put on food and refreshments in the art playhouse, which was free, but obviously people donated a bit of a pound or two, want a better statement. Just we'd do anything just to boost the funds. And on Sundays with payments for the golf raffle prizes and the halfway house, we managed to raise just under £1,900. So
that's excellent.
Very, very successful day.
Now, so I say it's close to our heart here because one of our runners, Nettie Stevens, is blind, and she brings her guide dog in Zola here on a regular basis. So we're sort of very close to this one. Is that the amount that you wanted? Because if you got to your amount, that then you go to the next stage, and you'll be able to have the dog trained, name the dog, and really sort of be part of you.
Well, I took over as captain on the 17th of November last year, 2016. We get 12 months. I hand over to my vice captain this November on the 16th of November, about 5 weeks away. But throughout the year, we just basically do any sort of fundraising events that we can. We have a captain's bunker, silly things like a captain's bunker. If anybody goes in the left-hand bunker front of the 18th green, then it costs them 50 pence in a jar on the bar. and throughout the year, we have all sorts of events where we have raffles, etc., etc. And we just fundraise for as much as we can. And currently, £2,500 is required to name a dog. Well, we've well and truly passed that. At the moment, I'm standing close to around £4,900. So hopefully, over the next 5 weeks, till I hand over, I'm hoping to reach the magic £5,000 mark.
That would be fantastic, won't it?
Yeah, it'd be absolutely superb.
I'll talk to you off air and get you to have a studio visit, and then you can tell everybody what you're going to name the dog.
As I understand it, I mean, obviously I've got to get all this clarified first, but I believe there's a list of names, so what I will do is put that up in the clubhouse and do it on a majority vote. So if 10 people we'll say Rex as an example, and that's the most votes for that name, that's what we'll go for, and we'll be able to, as when he goes through his training and when fully trained, hopefully we'll be able to make an appearance to just show the people and the members of the golf club what they're,
and it's going to make a massive
generous donate, yeah, generous,
and make a massive difference to someone, won't it? It's got to be a golfing name, though, hasn't it? You know, you call it something like Rory.
Possibly.
You can't call it four, can you, or putt?
I don't think we can call it four. No, that's not really a good term in golf. That means duck.
Yeah.
Something's coming towards you that's not.
So I've got Tony funny. Smith in here, the editor of the Advertiser, and he's tried to play golf before, and that was his favourite word.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I've met Tony on occasion through football and various other things.
It wasn't my favourite word, but we are before 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
David, how's life at Newark Golf Club? Is it all going well at the moment?
I believe so, yes. I mean, we've got a thriving membership. Obviously, like any business, because money is what is what makes things thrive. And obviously, we have over 500 full-time members, I believe it is. We have 5-day members. So, an advertisement to push, yes. I mean, if anybody's interested in either people that play golf or new starters, by all means, come up to the club. We have a well-trained staff in the shop. We have two teaching professionals, Rob and Paul. So it doesn't matter whether you've never picked a club up before or whether you're quite quite good at it. By all means, come up and I can guarantee you a warm welcome. and we have a beautiful clubhouse which most of us enjoy a drink or so and a meal afterwards. So yeah, there's the social side of golf as well, so it's not just purely playing golf. You meet new people, make friends. Obviously I love it. I was given this opportunity from a man that was born and bred into a working class family nearly 56 years ago, to have an opportunity like this, it was great, and I accepted it with both hands, and it's been stressful at times, but obviously I've enjoyed it.
It sounds fantastic. It sounds like we're going to need a lot longer conversation with you, David. I'll catch up with you later on this evening, probably, and arrange for you to come into the studio so you can have a long chat with us.
Lovely. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for telling us about the fundraising day, and it's a fantastic effort. Well done to yourself and everybody at the golf club.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you, David. Talk to you soon. Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Methinks we've found a new friend. Talking of friends, Adam Holland.
Oh, yes.
The wonderful Mr. Adam Holland. He's going on what he calls an epic challenge on Saturday the 21st of October. He's entered what's called the 24-hour Dartmoor Prison Break. Basically, they all start at Dartmoor Prison gates at the same time, and they have 24 hours to get as furthest away from Dartmoor as they can. And obviously, the winner is who's the furthest. Adam is aiming for Stonehenge.
Okay.
Which apparently is, in his reckoning, 117 miles from Dartmoor. I have sent him a message that if he's aiming for Stonehenge, if he does get to Newark, he can come on the show on the Monday night. Navigation skills and Adam, no. Don't go together. The national headlines.
Radio Newark Sport. Brought to you with Smith's Timber Merchants. For all your fencing, decking and DIY needs.
Former Scotland manager Alex McLeish says he'll be interested in a return to the role if Gordon Strachan leaves it. He hasn't got the sack yet in the jumping in. Crack. Sepp Blatter's former right-hand man, Jerome Veckel, is at the Court of Arbitration for Sport today appealing against his 10-year ban from football. He was fired as Secretary-General of the governing body last year and punished for his role in corrupt ticket sales and TV rights deal. He denies any wrongdoing. Don't you say a word. English cricket bosses say they're starting to look at Middlesex's appeal against the points deductions, which could save them from relegation. They lost 2 points for a slow overrate against Surrey before finishing just 1 point behind them in the county championship table. Middlesex say they didn't get the chance to improve because the game was abandoned because of the infamous crossbow that was fired onto the pitch and the umpires abandoned. I bet Somerset really are looking forward to the outcome of that one. Middlesex playing at Lords, the meetings at Lords, by people who come from Lords. No.
Radio Newark Sport. Brought to you with Smith's Timber Merchants. For all your fencing, decking and DIY needs on Appleton Gate, Newark. Visit smithstimber.co.uk.
A lot of people say to me that you and Mick just seem to have a laugh every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday night. But the best programme we ever have done on this show was the night we talked about mental health and how sport can help people through depression, through whatever form of mental illness you've got. And that was a cracking show that we did, and a lot of good work. I just thought if anybody missed that and that podcast was played to people with those problems, it will be a massive help. And normally we do have a good laugh, but that night I really felt as though we'd contributed to society in Newark.
We do laugh, but there is such a serious side to what people like Julie does as well. But the thing that really amazes me, that Julie and Chris Hassel, they do it with a smile on the face as well, you know. And it is fantastic, and it's all about Julie for the next 20 minutes. This is Radio Newark Sport with me, Mick Bradley, with him, Tony Smith, and with our special guest, direct from Toronto, the Invictus Games and Prince Harry, Julie Gray.
Direct from Prince Harry.
I got a photograph.
There you go.
I got a photograph.
Hobnobbing with Prince Harry with that colour hair and Harry's ginger.
From across the other side of a tennis court, I must admit.
Harry can't talk about weird coloured hair.
He can't get it now. Julie's got normal coloured hair too. Let's talk Invictus Games, because she was out there. Was you out there for the Invictus Games?
No.
Or was it something that ran parallel?
It just happened that the Invictus Games started at the same time as the VISTA conference, which is the International Paralympic Committee's technical conference, which I was actually out there for. It finished, and I had a day before my plane came home to go and have a look at what was going on. So,
which was meet Prince Harry and buy the official Invictus Games top.
Obviously, yes. Yeah, I mean, I would say meeting was across a crowded tennis court, but what I got a chance to watch some of the wheelchair tennis. I saw both of the UK pairs play. The semi-final but in their semi-finals, because they played each other in one of the semi-finals, and then I saw the pair play for the bronze medal, but unfortunately had to go before our UK one pair won the gold, because I had to go and get a plane home, unfortunately.
Terrible,
I know,
it's
very sad.
You had to be back in Lincoln for the weekend.
Yeah.
What, I mean, what Prince Harry has done for servicemen, he's on par with what you do for youngsters in Newark, in my world, but what he has done is to be applauded and is fantastic, because he hasn't got to do anything like this.
No, it's a superb effort.
And what he's doing, and the fact that it's getting bigger and more countries are joining, and the thing I like it best, he's one of them. He's not aloof to them.
No.
He's not got a shirt and a tie on, and he's not aloof to them. He's one of them.
No, I mean, he came, sat down by the side of the court with all of the team members and what have you. Obviously with his girlfriend, Megan.
She's met Megan as well now.
he was just chatting away to everybody. I mean, obviously we couldn't hear what he was saying, but I mean, you know, he's just one of the crowd, really.
He was saying, "Who's that weird woman with blue hair?"
The Invictus Games itself, Julie, I mean, I think we all agree it's a fantastic concept. And again, whereas you do it for 5, 6, 7, 8 year olds, he's doing it for adults that's, because of what's happened to them, don't want to go out anymore. They're in this, where we started the show. They're in one of those, the depression. The depression, not on, you know, it's...
Yes, and I think it's really nice that they have categories of, you know, because they have to categorise everything is similar to the way we do in Paralympic sport. But they have categories for people who are overcoming depression, people, you know, who haven't necessarily got a permanent condition, and they're recovering and that kind of thing, which is marvellous, because that doesn't happen in Paralympic sport, and so you've got that extra piece there which enables more people to participate,
because Paralympic sports then is physically disabled.
There's 10 categories. Oh, here we go.
This is going to be the test.
Yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah. Tony, there's no way.
Way
I can remember all 10. But there's 10 categories. There's the physical categories, but there's also like people with a visual impairment. There's also, you know, people with an intellectual impairment as well. But that all of those categories have to be permanent, and that's where there is just that slight difference with the Invictus games.
Yeah, the Invictus ones. You would hope that some of them are not permanent.
Yes,
yes,
yeah.
They would come out
so
of this dark
things
place
like the depression, yes, and that kind of thing, and you know, and that they have a category for those people who are suffering like that. So, I think that's quite an enlightened thing to do.
Getting slightly political for a minute, how do the Olympic organisations view Invictus?
I honestly don't know. I couldn't comment on that. I don't know.
Because they're not part of, you know, you can see it, can't you, now?
There's a difference. There is a difference, obviously. I think what a lot of Paralympic sports look at is the ones that have got a permanent disability, and where can we nick a few of them from, and are they going to be any good at any other sports, you know? Yeah. That kind of thing, you know. Yeah, we're looking at them wheelchair tennis players, yeah, and the ones on the cycling, yeah, and it, they, yeah, they
well,
they do.
I mean, there again, and that's brilliant, because then these guys and girls have got another career in front of them, haven't, yeah, they? That, you know, they can be a world-class sports person because of, yeah, what they've been seeing in Invictus. But how does then a young lady that took two dozen children out onto the river, the road to where you are now, it seems to have just happened?
Yeah, well, it's actually since 2009 I started, and it just I think it was right place at right time, quite frankly. I'd obviously been doing the paddleability stuff at Home Pierpont for ages, and the GB were looking for somebody to be a medical classifier. They'd already asked the other person who works with us to do the paddleability to do a go and train as a technical classifier, but they didn't know who could we ask. And she's my mentor, actually, Viv. She said, "Well, there's Julie. She's a physio, so she understands the medical side of things, but she also canoes, so therefore she's got a little bit of that technical knowledge as well. How about her?" And so I went to a workshop to learn how to classify people, then went to the first World Championships. That was in Canada, in Halifax, in 2009, and then when paracanoe was made into a Paralympic sport, it got its status as Paralympic in 2010. I was asked to be the head of classification for the International Canoe Federation, which I did until Rio. It's now passed on to somebody else, and I'm an international classifier. I'm on the paracanoe committee. I'm on the paracanoe classification subcommittee. It's you know, so you know, that's kind of how it's panned out. It's grown, really.
But the great thing about this, listeners, is if you actually go and look on Julie's Facebook page, there is an absolutely wonderful picture. And I say it's a wonderful picture, and the reason why it's a wonderful picture is it means she's not changed. She's still the Julie we know and love. There's a group of these international classifiers, and they're all there in the shirts and the ties and the little pleated skirts and everything, and there's Julie in her shorts and a blue hair and a I come from Newark top. You know, it's absolutely fantastic, because it just proves she's still our Julie Gray.
I do stand out from the crowd.
Rio.
Yeah, over a year ago now. Shocking, isn't it?
Where Tony and I sit, this is absolutely fantastic, but was it all it was cracked up to be? Because there's a lot of not so nice things about that city.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, we didn't really see much of the other sides of it. What we saw was down at the lake. You know, I mean, we were working, obviously, so we were down at the lake. You know, you'd got Christ the Redeemer sort of like looking down on you. It was gorgeous weather. I mean, I'm sorry, but what more can you want?
Rub it in.
Yeah, it was you know, fantastic. And obviously, you know, for me, the fact that, you know, GB did so incredibly well, you know, is kind of a bit of an icing on the cake. Not that I'm allowed to, you know, be impartial.
That's
I have to be impartial.
No.
But I was actually sort of like working in the tent at the end of the course, doing boat checking and stuff afterwards to make sure that the boats were right and what was actually inside the boats were right and all that kind of thing, and the equipment was correct. But every time I'd finished doing that job, I ran outside the tent to just in time to see the next lot finish, to find out who'd won the next race, shout "well done," and then ran back inside the tent. So, yeah.
I see what you mean about Globetrotter, because you talk about Halifax in Canada, we talk about Halifax in Yorkshire.
yeah. Well, I've been a fair few places this year.
Where's the worst place?
Halifax in Yorkshire.
Probably Germany. Probably Germany. Just because... Oh, the food's rubbish.
Fair enough.
And as classifiers, we don't get treated quite as special there as we do in other places. So, they kind of shove us to the side in Germany, whereas in other places we're treated quite nicely, really. You know, we get invited into the VIP tent and, you know...
And drink it.
And, you know, and that kind of thing. So it can be quite pleasant. I mean, as I say, I mean, you work hard, you have a chance to have a bit of a play as well, don't you? So,
because I think sort of it is the group, so you all sort of meet up, don't you, and you're all a group together when you meet up.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, there's usually a gang of us, sort of thing, because we need at least two people to classify one person, because we have a medical person and a technical person as well. We have somebody that's our technical director, who is also like the chair of the Paracanoe committee, who is always there to, you know, to make sure that anything technical is right and sorts out all of which race is happening this and all the rest of it. And you know, we usually have a Paracanoe secretary who's there doing all of the inputting and computer stuff that basically I don't understand. And you know, so that's quite nice, really.
Try getting to answer a message.
Yeah. So it all depends on how many athletes we've got that need classification, how many teams of classifiers are there. So for somewhere like the World Championship, we'll have at least three, and if not four, teams of classifiers, plus usually a couple of classifiers who are there on what we call our mentoring programme. So they're actually there to, to work with the classifiers, the international classifiers, to bring themselves up to standard, if you like, to then become international classifiers themselves.
So where have you been in 2017 then?
Okay.
Are you ready for this?
Okay. I went for a meeting in Paris at the beginning of the year, training just near Rome, then Plovdiv in Bulgaria for the Europeans, then the Czech Republic, Lečice in the Czech Republic for the World Championships, and then I've been to Canada for the IPC Vista Conference.
Between now and Christmas?
I will be going to Thailand for the Asian Paracanoe Championships.
You know what they say, it's a hard life, but somebody's got to
do it.
Back to the telephone lines and back to last weekend's sport. And if you recall, we spoke to Rob Orgill about the Dave Lewis Challenge. Now, this is a Newark Athletic Club event, but it's not just running, it's running stroke orienteering. So I did a bit of orienteering in the car when I tried to find the man that was apparently at the stage 2 marker. And I must have done 40 miles in the car, and I did not find this man at the stage 2 marker at all. So I failed on Saturday, and then I found out he'd only up and left and gone back to Kelham. Good afternoon, Mr. Orgill.
Hello, Mick. Kelham Fox is lovely, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yes, that was where I started, just to get my bearings right. But they told me where you was, but I don't know.
Sorry about that.
Something went wrong.
Our job was done, so we went to the pub.
No, your job wasn't done. I was going to turn up for some cake.
It was lovely.
Rob, what sort of day did you have?
No, it was a good day. Weather was kind. Everyone enjoyed it. I think we were a little disappointed on the turnout, but hey, that's, you know, can't be helped. And we raised, I think the final recce was just over £350 for the worthy causes that we were supporting. So overall, it was a good day.
Yes, I was actually told the numbers was down, but then I went home and had a look, and those, it was a busy weekend, but it wasn't your normal weekend for it, was it?
No, we moved it forward a week. It would have been this Saturday, but this Saturday is the start of the cross-country season.
Right, yeah.
So we moved it forward a week, and that, you know, everyone, every weekend's busy, whichever weekend in the year you pick. But I say, we had a decent turnout. Everybody enjoyed it, and it was safe. That's the main thing. I say, there's £350 going to some worthy causes as a result, so we count that as a positive.
I mean, the long distance, just tell me again what the longest distance was.
It was about 27 and a half miles.
Because I was sort of nearer Ollerton than I was nearer Kelham, and those signs up for walkers and runners, so some of them just did a fair distance.
Yeah, it's a fair distance. The leading chap went round there in about 3 3/4 hours, so he'd got a fair lick on.
He was moving.
They would say. Yeah, he was moving.
No wonder he got back to Kelham quickly.
Yeah, and he was smiling, because he arrived back just as we got back to Kelham, and we were in the car. he thoroughly enjoyed it. He actually lived in Upton, and there was a checkpoint in Upton. He said he was very tempted to go home for a cup of tea, but thought he'd better carry on. So yeah, it was a good day. As I say, cross country this Saturday. We're going to your favourite city, renowned for its football team.
Yes. I told Amber on Tuesday. She needs to come back with a victory from there. She needs to get out safe as well. Be safe if you're going there.
Well, that'll be a first for Derby, won't it? A victory.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So you're off cross-country, are you?
Yes, I missed all of last season with Achilles tendon injuries, so and ended up being the health and safety manager for the national cross-country as a result. So this year I'm determined to run.
it's much more fun.
Someone's got to do it, and that was my bit for national cross country. So yeah, I'm hoping to get through the whole season, but now I'm an old boy, it's a bit tricky.
Oh dear, listen to him. You can run with Gareth.
Not that slow.
It wouldn't be a conversation with. Just before then, Louise, the swimming season has finished, but she was out last weekend, but she was doing, not swimming, she was sort of doing a bit of judging or something.
She's out this Saturday. It's the Newark Swimming Club age group championships, so that gives all the youngsters an opportunity to have a competitive swim against their club mates. So she's swum with Newark Swimming Club since she was 5. I won't say how many years that's been.
15 at the most.
Not that many. So she will be, and a lot of others will be doing a lot of volunteering to make that happen.
And this is at our own Sports and Leisure Centre, is it?
Yes, yeah, it's the one on... I don't think it's got a name, has it?
The Newark Sports and Leisure Centre. Why don't they name it? I really... It's beyond me.
That's nappy, isn't it?
Yeah, it's wonderful, isn't it?
But yeah, it's there, the one on Bowbridge Road. Yeah. So they're off there on Saturday. I say, a lot of work by a lot of people. But the ones that I've been to, all the junior swimmers seem to really enjoy it. It's a chance to swim and show off a bit in front of mum and dad and grandma and granddad, so they always seem to like
it. That's what it's all about, isn't it?
It is.
Enjoy it.
Yes.
Lovely. Rob, have we got a new joke?
Talking of Derby, I've been in Derby today. I've heard that the fans of Derby County are trying to sue the architects who designed Pride Park Stadium. Apparently, they're criticising that the seats actually face the pitch.
Good lad, you're my new favourite. And on that note, Rob, I'm going to leave you when you're on a high.
Lovely to speak with you.
Yep, thank you. Thanks, Rob. Bye-bye. Bye bye. Bye. I'd like Rob Allgill. So, Julie, probably the busiest year for an awful long time. Are you enjoying what you're doing now? You've got to enjoy it. That's a stupid question. But, I mean, is it...
It
must be tiring.
It is, you know, obviously, there's a bit of jet lag going on a lot of the time. But, I'm obviously enjoy doing it. And although I don't get an awful lot of time to explore where we are, I do get a little bit of time, just, you know, maybe half a day or a couple of hours here or whatever, to just have a little bit of a look around all these different places that I'm going to. So that's quite nice, really.
Some of these ex-Eastern Europeans, you know, the Czechoslovakia and the Prague, I mean, some of those cities don't look like they've been touched for years, and they're really looking old. They really do look nice.
Yeah. Plovdiv was a revelation in Bulgaria. I'd never even heard of it before. I didn't even know where it was. But it's going to be European City of Culture in 2019, and it's got Roman remains and mosaics and stadiums and
just nobody knows, do they?
No, it's amazing. There was so much of it. It was just lying around on the street, practically. You know,
it's an absolutely brilliant city. Don't you say Uncle Bulgaria either?
No.
Other
rumbles are available.
what you got for forays coming up?
Oh crikey. Well, bit of social, obviously, because it's nearly fireworks night. I always do fireworks at my house. For that. We'll be doing our usual Christmas raffle. Last weekend we did have a fundraiser, actually, Jacob Page's parents are fantastically organised, you know, and we raised just over £1,000 for the club.
Oh, brilliant.
Which was, a fantastic effort, you know, all of the parents all pitched in and helped, you know, selling raffle tickets and tickets for the evening and what have you. We had a quiz night. We didn't do particularly well. But,
what geography was it?
No, we had one on flags and we were still useless. You would have thought I'd have known a few of them, wouldn't you? But no. that was really good. Obviously, we haven't got any more...
You're off the water now.
Well, we're on the water on a Saturday morning still. We're still getting on the water on a Saturday morning until it gets really cold and horrible. Yeah. We'll keep trying.
Then that's it.
But we're in the gym during the week, and I've got a new bunch of youngsters that I'm bringing on. So I've got I've added an extra night in the gym. So I've got kids coming three nights a week now to the gym, and and as I say, Saturday mornings on the water. We haven't got any more competitions until next year now. So it's a quieter period.
It's never quiet for you.
No, it isn't.
We've run out of time, Julie. Time's beat us. But thank you for coming in. If we ever declare independence in Newark and do the honours list, you are Dame Julie Gray. No, that's it. Dame Julie Gray.
It's got a ring to it.
It's got a ring to it. And it would be Sir Douglas Hall, because Sir Douglas Hall is coming up next on Your Wireless. We love news.